from the number one sports site in the world. Yahoo! This is Yahoo Sports Radio. YahooSportsRadio.com.
Welcome to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast.
The boy Yelovich is an own goal! It's an own goal!
With your host, Joe Manko. From Yahoo Sports and Yahoo Sports Radio.
It's Friday! It's a landslide!
Joe Manko and all the insiders from the FC Yahoo Soccer Blog bring you coverage of soccer across the world.
Premier League,
MLS,
Champions League,
La Liga,
Serie A,
and Bundesliga. It's all the coverage from soccer across the world.
This is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast.
Oh, it's going in!
Right now.
Incredibly, within seconds.
From the Yahoo Sports headquarters in Playa Vista, California, here's your host, Joe Manko.
Hello and welcome to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. I'm Joe Manko, editor of the FC Yahoo blog on Yahoo Sports. Joining me here in the Playa Vista podcasting room, we've got Joey Galino to my right.
I'm always blowing bubbles for the Bowling Ground. Great send-off today.
It was magnificent. With they were playing a little Frank Sinatra at the end, weren't they?
Yes, they were.
Sitting directly across from me on this wonderful table here is Shahan Ahmed.
I'm more a fan of Olympic stadiums.
And we have Alex Baker to my left.
Joey, the bubbles. I was going to say the bubbles. We're always on the same page with these. We got to coordinate.
I owed you one after you stole my line.
I know.
I stole it right back today.
Damn, we're even now.
It's West Ham. I got to be hooligan, okay?
Guys, we are taping on Tuesday, the day of the final game played at the Bowling Ground in East London, where West Ham United came back from 2-1 down to beat Manchester United on Winston Reid's 80th-minute goal. West Ham is now just a point behind fifth-place United, and United is still 2 points behind fourth-place Man City in the Premier League standings. We're going to start off by talking about Man United. So United finishes the season on Sunday at home against Bournemouth, but I want you guys to assess Man United's chances of actually finishing fourth. Who wants to start?
I'll start. I think they actually still have a pretty darn good chance of finishing in the top four, just because when you look at the way Man City's been playing, it's been so up and down. Every time you're like, oh, you know what? This is the game they're going to win. They don't win that game. They actually blow it. And going away to Swansea in the type of form that Swansea's been in, considering the wins that they had against Liverpool and against the same West Ham team where they went to Upton Park and destroyed the same team. You know, you look at Man City going to the Liberty Stadium. I think that's a tricky fixture. If they lose that and United wins against Bournemouth at home, which you probably expect them to do, United is top four again. And all of a sudden, everything is forgotten. Everything's great again. You're in the FA Cup final and you finish top four.
But is there any confidence in either team? It seems like both teams are limping to the finish line, doesn't it?
Yeah, I have no confidence in either one. They could both mess it up, but you'd count on United to beat Bournemouth at Old Trafford, I would think. And as Shahan says, I see City easily dropping points in this, but you feel like United's got to be better than they were or not. I don't know. Bournemouth's maybe a different kettle of fish than West Ham, who let's not take anything away from them, were really good today and outshot United 3-1 on shots on goal. But both these Manchester teams have been pretty disappointing this season, especially City, who I think had the best chance to win the Premier League, probably of any team starting the season.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how people react on the internet these days to not just soccer, everything pretty much, but we'll talk about soccer here. You know, United losing this game today, all of a sudden, oh, that automatically means Man City is safe and they're going to go back in the Champions League. But I agree with you guys. It's not that simple. Swansea's been playing well. They've been pummeling a couple of good teams lately. City is so up and down. They were so limp in that UEFA Champions League semifinal. You know, they drew Newcastle Newcastle a couple weeks ago. They obviously drew Arsenal this weekend and kind of lacked that fire, that steel, whatever you want to call it, to finish the Gunners off once they went ahead. And the thing that, you know, United is, no, they haven't been tremendous over the past couple weeks either. However, they do have the FA Cup final coming up, and maybe not just they're going to go into this match against Bournemouth on the last day of the season looking to get into the Champions League, but they also kind of want to be playing well heading into that match against Crystal Palace, so I think that could be something there. Something that does work in City's favor, though, when you play a soccer match, we all know this, there's three outcomes: win, lose, draw. City can live with two of those, because a draw, even if United wins, City's goal differential is so staggeringly higher than United, they'll still get the Champions League spot. But United needs a win. Now, but the other twist is, like, you know, you'd pencil United in to beat Bournemouth. You'd think that they would. Bournemouth's about as bad as you can get in the league this year without actually being in the thick of the relegation battle, and United's at Old Trafford. Meanwhile, City's got the tricky road fixture. So the only thing, I guess what I'm saying is, we just when we think we know something, we don't know anything, and anything is possible here, and it's definitely not a shoo-in that City's going to be in the Champions League next year.
United definitely needs a victory. They're at 63. If they win, they go to 66. The goal differential goes with City. They're plus 30. United is only plus 12. But let's – so the reason I – well, before we started recording, I was saying that, you know, I don't know what to make of this United – team or season, because it's been this up and down roller coaster. Now, they beat Norwich on Saturday, but it wasn't the most convincing performance. But they didn't have Rashford, they didn't have Martial. You know, it was really left up to Rooney to try to manufacture goals, and he did. So I thought there was some optimism going into it. I mean, they were going to East London with Martial and Rashford playing, but then they get. I mean, just the numbers alone are stunning. I mean, just the stats are not kind to Man United. They got outshot 20-3. They had possession, but that didn't mean anything. 15% possession. They had almost as many fouls, 18 United did, as West Ham had shots.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that you kind of, or I take into consideration, are the bus attacks coming into this game. The pushing it back 45 minutes. I don't think that necessarily has, you know, had a full on. I don't think it changed the outcome per se, because I don't want to take anything away from the players in West Ham. But those first 20 minutes, United completely got overrun. They could have given up 2-3 goals at that point. They were down 1-0. They came back. They played pretty well. You know, I think a lot of credit should go to Wayne Rooney in terms of his ability to adapt and play that deep lying midfielder position. He was pinging balls all over the place, helping United get some control of that match. And then, you know, Anthony Martial has been, in my opinion, their best outfield player. If David De Gea wasn't on the team, I would say overall they're their best player. So yeah, him not being there last week and then him being there this week, scoring a couple of goals, you know, he was the guy who put them in the FA Cup final too. I think that having those guys there does make a big difference. So I think when you see them go up against Bournemouth, yes, there's no given 3 points in the Premier League at all this season. We've seen that no matter who's playing, frankly. But I think that you would take United to win that game. And as to what to make of them, I don't think anyone knows. I think Louis van Gaal doesn't know.
I can tell you what I make of them. And Martial and Rashford have been great, but it says a lot about this United team that their player of the year has been David De Gea for three seasons running.
Where if would he's they the MVP, be? Shouldn't the fax machine that didn't...
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking. If Real Madrid had got
the
paper...
There's a fax machine, it should be at least the co-MVP, right? They're not putting the transfer through, right?
It's true.
Yes, it's so true. It's true. Renew that fax machine's contract.
Forget Ed Woodward. Give all the money to the fax machine.
Oh, here, yeah, it's breaking on Twitter. The fax machine was named the Office Equipment of the Year
there
for Manchester United.
So. I heard PSG might be in for that fax machine, the 10 million euro bid.
Yeah, I mean, but in terms of Van Gaal and, you know, his impact on the squad, we've talked about this a few times and gone back and forth about, well, if they get rid of him and bring in Mourinho or who they bring in. Okay, Van Gaal was seen, Ferguson was seen having lunch with Pochettino, and, you know, people obviously started talking immediately. I personally don't think Pochettino would go to United because he has a good thing going. But when you think about United and what they have currently, and you look at Spurs, they do need a guy that's pretty much like Pochettino. That would be the perfect fit for them because they have kind of a young and up-and-coming squad. they don't necessarily want to just go out and spend a bunch of money. They want to develop these guys because there is talent. I mean, Rashford, Martial are two guys that really do stand out. You know, I had to go back and look at Martial's age again because I have to keep reminding myself he's 20. You know, their best player this season, who's coming up with big goals and big moments when they need him, is 20 years old.
It's pretty amazing because, as you know, we go back to when United bought Martial. There's a lot of criticism, whether it was, I won't say it was a panic buy, but it was kind of like too much too early for the kid. He wasn't ready yet, and here he is. You know, arguably he has been the best outfield player for United.
Well, he's not been fazed by his price tag. People say that, you know, Fernando Torres, when he went for $50 million to Chelsea, again, sorry, Joe, that the price tag kind of crushed him a bit. But Martial has just sort of shrugged it off and has just been playing his football.
Yeah, and he's kind of the centerpiece going forward for them. And when we had this conversation about the future of Manchester United a week or two ago, one thing we all agreed on was you don't get rid of Van Gaal. Even someone like me who's not really that big on him in this situation, you don't get rid of him if there's nothing there. If Pochettino really wants to leave Tottenham for Manchester United right now, there's something there, and that's something that they can look at, because I think the only consistent thing with Van Gaal is inconsistency. But then the question becomes, does Pochettino want to leave a Tottenham side who doesn't necessarily play in the same financial sphere as Manchester United, and you might not bank on them going forward in those terms, but there is something special at Tottenham right now. They have a lot of young talent that really likes each other, that wants to stay there and play together. So even if they don't really need to go out and maybe necessarily and buy like a superstar. They just need to make some tweaks here and there in the roster. So at that point, you know, Pochettino's got to ask himself, which job do I want more? Because Manchester United, if he is there, will, you got to think, throw the kitchen sink at him to get that kind of manager on that team.
Should we scare Spurs supporters by actually speculating who Pochettino might bring with him to Old Kent. Trafford? Dele Alli?
What's that you say? Needle Spurs fans? All right, Alex and I guess we'll do it.
Let's just start with Alderweireld and Vertonghen. Just start with the middle of the defense
is
and move it over.
Is Eric Dyer not Michael Carrick 2.0 in a lot of ways, too?
Let's not push Van Gaal out yet. So,
oh, can't we?
In the news today, there were reports that Van Gaal actually, believe it or not, vetoed a deal that would have brought Renato Sanchez from Benfica to Old Trafford.
Right.
So, does this mean that Van Gaal is staying, or are we just reading too much into this?
To me, if it says anything, it says I might be managing another club and would be interested in signing him next year, so I'm not going to bring him here.
But I go back to PSV Eindhoven.
I do find it somewhat curious that they're really, at this advanced stage of the season, looking to him to make these type of personnel decisions. I mean, you would think that the scouting staff and everybody else in place should be making those calls along with, you know, Ed Woodward. The fact that they're going to Van Gaal, especially at this heightened time of pressure for the season, without any real security in terms of him coming back next year, I find it a little curious from a club standpoint. I think that, you know, so a lot of times the manager's job is to manage the players that the club gives him, right? That's ultimately his job. Yes, he may have some input on those players. He may want certain players. But if you, like I always say, I don't think that Anthony Martial was Louis Van Gaal's buy. Why would he know that much or want that much to do with a 19-year-old kid that was largely unproven? I don't think that he sets that price tag. I don't think he brings that guy in. I think the club brings him in, and he makes the best of it with him.
Right.
I think that's the approach you take as a club. So the fact that these reports are coming out that they actually went to Van Gaal and Van Gaal's the one who vetoed it, very curious for me.
Let's move to the blue half of Manchester and talk about City. We've gone over the situation. They're in fourth right now, 2 points ahead of United. As Shahan mentioned, they go to a resurgent Swansea side at the Liberty Stadium that's coming off some pretty impressive wins over Liverpool and at West Ham. But assess City's chances of finishing fourth.
Man, I just don't trust them. I really don't. I think they're going to bottle this. Because we all respect, you know, what those players, what the core of City has done over the past few years, and we obviously respect Kevin De Bruyne, the biggest new signing that they made this year. But you go back to last summer where people were saying, you know, City was a little inactive for a lot of the transfer window, and people were thinking, okay, are they going to give it one more ride with these, you know, this golden generation of City players, so to speak, or are they going to buy big? And they ended up not really buying big and kind of hitching their wagon to these guys that had, you know, in fairness, had proven that they could win Premier League titles. Now, you know, they've been so inconsistent the whole season, and then obviously the announcing Guardiola as the manager coming in for Pellegrini, I don't think helped things at all. I think that's clear. It kind of left the club and a bit of a directionless malaise. They, you know, they don't really know what they're playing for, and you know that kind of manifested itself in big games. Everybody remembers the Leicester City game at the Etihad, where Leicester City went in there and bossed City around. They pushed them around and looked like the superior side, which they ultimately proved to be. And then you see City and just looks so toothless and punchless in the Champions League semifinals. I can't count on them to win this game. I don't even know if I can count on them to draw this game the way that Swansea's been playing recently. So I'm going to have to say that United's still going to get this done.
I kind of agree with you, actually. You look at City, they gave up the lead twice against Arsenal last weekend. This team just seems to be operating so far below its potential. Granted, United are as well, but I just see City dropping points, and I see United getting the win at Bournemouth.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it, you know, Pellegrini was kind of, he was criticized for putting too much emphasis on the Champions League rather than necessarily the league, because he's not going to be here next year. So what's the point of really focusing on the league and your league standing? I think a lot of the players are in the same boat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they look around like, I'm not going to necessarily be here next year. Do I really need to go out right now? I'm pretty fat and happy. I don't really care about this. The
Are you
last
talking about Yaya Touré?
I'm talking about a few guys, but yeah. I think Yaya's probably in that boat. I think Yaya.
You said the words fat and happy, so
low blow, Joe. Low blow. Oh, you man. Know, Yaya, for all the stick he gets, he has been. He was their standout player for several years.
He was.
And he was, frankly, the standout midfielder in the world, if not in the Premier League, at the very least.
I think Yaya was wearing a shirt out for more than for a good reason when he came on on the weekend. So just saying.
Wow.
It was like he hasn't been. You know, I mean, just saying, this is a problem with the team. I think what you're getting at is when you announce that someone's coming to take over to replace the manager, how can that there not be a malaise? And I think we kind of hit on that in previous episodes, that you know you're going into entering territory of very much uncertainty. Like either the team is going to rally around a guy like Bayern tried to do with Pep. It's not like there was a whole lot of enthusiasm to begin with around Pellegrini. I mean, this team has sleepwalked the entire season, so. Mm-hmm. The way they're finishing right now, it's not really a surprise.
Yeah, and that's the big thing, I think. You know, we bring up the whole you know Guardiola thing taking over, and you can say, okay, well, City's either going to respond to this one of two ways. They're going to respond where they're going to bust their butts to try to prove that they still belong here, they can still play for a Pep Guardiola side, because you know he's going to go out there and try to get the biggest names in Europe. Or they could pack it in and be like, well, you know what, I might not even be here next year. I've won the Premier League. I've won the League Cup. I've, you know, had this success here. Maybe I'm happy. Maybe I'm ready to move on. And it's clear that the reaction has been the latter, and that's why I can't trust them at this point.
Isn't it interesting that the two teams that are known for, they're backed by, you know, the billionaire backings, City and Chelsea, the biggest problem with those clubs is motivating the players. And the players, they run things,
mm-hmm.
and you need someone in there to get them to play, and that is the trick. But
Is that Eden Hazard?
I am talking about Eden Hazard. No, I think it's a problem. I think, you know, can Pep get the most out of, you know, whoever he keeps from that City side, and Antonio Conte comes into Stamford Bridge, you know. It's always everyone says nice things, you know, right at the beginning, but until they actually, you know, work to see each other every day and work together every day, you know, and you've got issues, there's friction, and you can't solve it, you know, that's when these managers are going to earn their money or lose their jobs, you know, unfortunately.
Yeah, that seems like a systemic problem at City with the lack of motivation you've seen from these guys. When they won the title under Mancini, the guys lost motivation next season. Seems like they've been unmotivated for the last couple seasons under Pellegrini.
I disagree just on one front, because seemingly people always say they lost motivation. No, they lost Yaya Toure for the Africa Cup of Nations, and it happened that when they didn't lose him, they would win the title. When he went on the Africa Cup of Nations, they wouldn't, because he'd go away for January, come back, and never really get back in the swing of things. Happened twice. But that's why this year City should have won it, because he didn't go away for the Africa Cup of Nations. However, Yaya fell off this year, like, considerably to what he'd been previously, and even going last year to the Africa Cup of Nations, the Ivory Coast finally won it, and he had a lot to do with that. So it's not like last year was entirely a failure for him either. I think that, you know, this year, clearly in Europe in particular, he just did not bring it, and it really showed, and I think that that hurt them a great deal. But
David Silva not being fit.
That also, yeah, I mean, especially with De Bruyne, because De Bruyne, when he came back in and Silva was fit, they looked like they could really do some damage again, and then Silva goes down and they just couldn't put it together.
I want to, maybe wrap it up a little bit, just like to go to a broader point that the Leicester success is sort of hinted at, and I think this kind of, builds off the conversation about how Chelsea and City, the lack of motivation is there. Manchester United has been the top club of the Premier League era, but a lot of people kind of confuse that with, like, Sir Alex Ferguson just buying recklessly the greatest players. No. In the early 90s, he had that famed class of 92. He had a lot of smart buys. Yes, they spent a lot of money, but they didn't, spend any more so than maybe Chelsea when Abramovich came there, and, what City's doing right now. They kind of built a core of players, and they had the coach, and they kept that around for a long time. So they sort of did it with, in a way that isn't like these big buying clubs and stuff like that. And then you see Abramovich take over Chelsea, and you restore success to that club that hadn't really had it for about 50 years or something like that. Then you see, the group take over Manchester City and turn them into, this big club. But, you almost kind of wonder if the era of huge spending in soccer is, I'm not going to say it's over. It's clearly not, because, those clubs are going to attract the best managers because they have the most resources. But I almost wonder if the playing field's going to level out a little bit more, and you're going to see more, maybe not necessarily 5,000-to-1 shots win the Premier League, but the upper half of the table might be a little more stocked with some of these formerly considered mid-table clubs than you'd think, while these other bigger clubs kind of struggle with these issues that are surfacing.
I personally don't. I don't put too much stock in terms of these players being lazy or anything of that form. I mean, in terms of being fat and well-fed. As much as I said that earlier, I kind of said it tongue-in-cheek because, you look at teams like Real, Barcelona, Bayern, those guys are getting paid ridiculous amounts of money, and they seem to come out and perform. You look at even Chelsea in the past. I think that this year was an anomaly, and I think it actually goes into central defense more than anything else. When you look at City and you look at Chelsea, you look at their central defenders, they were in real trouble this year, and that's where they kind of fell apart. You look at Leicester City, you look at Tottenham, they had the two best center-back pairings in the league, and that's what got them to the top of the league, in my opinion. Now, you look at, John Terry.
That's a very good point.
John Terry's transition out, and then Vincent Kompany's injuries completely doomed those two
seasons. Why didn't those clubs go and address those? I mean, Chelsea tried. They tried to go after John Stones.
City did, too. I mean, Mangala, they brought in, Otamendi. You're talking about Di Michaelis fell off for them this year. He's, frankly, been falling off steadily over time. He'll work out for a few games, and then he always gets exposed.
He was never a serious solution, though.
But it was still a solution that Pellegrini felt trust with because of his time with Malaga and just going back to the past. I mean, Van Gaal can tell you that he's not the right solution because he had him at Bayern and it cost him the Champions League final. I mean, these guys aren't the best solutions, but they did attempt solutions. They did pay money for Mangala. Mangala wasn't cheap by any means. I mean, he's, the second most expensive defender in the world?
Yeah, he was
behind David Luiz.
Pretty high.
And he's only the second most disappointing buy.
They tried to address him, but really when you actually look at it and what it comes down to for me is those center backs. That's really where these teams, with all their money and everything, they fell apart. They didn't have stability where they needed it in defense.
Why is that? Why is it the bigger clubs just so attracted to trying to play attractive soccer and they want to bring in attacking talent? And not like Chelsea brought in a whole bunch of people. They had defending champions, but or were the reigning champions. But why don't these clubs address the needs? Like it's United hubris. Has always,
In my opinion, because I mean, you look at last year, Chelsea started. Well, John Terry started every single game last year. You knew his age. You knew that he couldn't sustain that for another season. But you pretended not to know it, and you're like, no, it's fine. Then you know the Zuma injury didn't help Chelsea by any means either, because they were trying to put him in there.
Yeah.
But by then it had already become apparent that their back line wasn't working. Terry wasn't the player he was. You know,
Ivanovic.
Well, he's not a center. Ivanovic wasn't, but you know. Mourinho actually pulled John Terry during a game, which he'd never done before. He didn't start him. You saw that from his standpoint, the first things that he went to try and fix the problems were in the back, and it was with actually the center backs in particular. And then he tried to play, you know, Kurt Zouma right back a little bit to show off, hey, we need to buy some players because I need help back here. But it was that for me, that's where it showed up first and foremost. And back then, you know, see, I don't fully take, because these are the same teams where these guys were getting overpaid 2 years ago or even last year, and they won the titles. So all of a sudden they're like, oh, we're overpaid, so we don't have to play anymore. No, I think there were actually deficiencies that were brought to light, and the teams that didn't have those deficiencies, I mean, your center backs are massive in terms of keeping teams away from scoring on your goal. And you know, like today, Daley Blind really had a tough game today against. I mean, that's a lot of this loss to West Ham I put on Blind just really not having a good game by any stretch of the imagination. But Van Gaal and his system likes to have a guy that can pass out of the back so they don't just hoof it up and they maintain possession. So their possession stats look good. But is Daley Blind really a center back? I think that's a question that
Leander Charlatans will tell you that he plays that plays center back for the national team. So
yeah, but
it's not foreign to him.
And you know, Leander's not here to defend himself, but you know, the Netherlands curiously are not the European champions.
They're not 2014.
So maybe it's not the best center back in the world, right there.
Well, I think you know, going back to the original point that I made, I do think that I was kind of speaking more to the Premier League than Europe as a whole. Because if you look at the big clubs elsewhere, Atleti being the exception, because they defend really well, because it's basically their only choice, defend and counter. Sure, you can pick out guys, David Alaba at Bayern Munich, Mats Hummels at Borussia Dortmund, Piqué at Barcelona.
At Bayern.
No. Or at Bayern, excuse me, yeah. Sergio Ramos at Real Madrid. You can pick out elite defenders, but you do not need an elite defense to win La Liga and Bayern and the Bundesliga, I don't think. I think you need that spine that you're kind of talking about with the big clubs more so in England. And I'm not saying that makes it better or worse. You know, English fans love to say that's what makes their league the best. But I do think it's more critical. And the fact that those teams didn't recognize that, the big clubs, is kind of baffling. And one team that did, to their credit, is Tottenham, because they bought Alderweireld, and he's been fantastic, arguably the best defender in the Premier League this season. And, you know, it's just kind of funny to see Tottenham doing that and all these other teams not being strong down the middle, and that's why you saw – that's a big reason why you saw Leicester and Tottenham finish 1-2 this year.
Do we want to wrap up our Premier League conversation of the week with a look at the relegation?
Situation? Yeah, it should be a quick look.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, to set it up, we've got Sunderland in 17th. They're a point in the safety zone above Newcastle, which sits at 34 points. On Sunday, let's see, we have Newcastle at home to Tottenham, and Sunderland is going to Watford. Now, if you go
they have two games, though. They have a game in hand. That's where the advantage comes.
That's right. Tomorrow, Sunderland is at home to Everton. If you go by what happened on the weekend, Sunderland had a really great result coming back or beating Chelsea 3-2 at home. DeAndre Yedlin of the U.S. men's national team set up the Jermaine Defoe's winner. And then for those who actually watched Villa Newcastle, I apologize, but that was that was dreadful. 0-0. Newcastle, right going into that game, you'd think they would have some momentum against a Villa side that's been relegated long ago. That's actually played well of late. But How do you guys see this shaking out? Who is going to stay up between Sunderland and Newcastle?
Sunderland.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward.
Jermaine Defoe, relegation god. He just knows how to beat relegation. 2 years in a row, he's been huge.
Yeah.
I think, what is he, up to 15 goals now, I want to say?
Something like that.
It's incredible when you consider Sunderland is not a great team by any stretch of the imagination. Without Defoe, they're gone down. They're hovering slightly above Villa.
Yeah, but I think it also kind of speaks to that club. You know, this is a team that has really and they've, you know, had player changeover over the past few seasons, but one thing that's remained, this team knows how to escape from the relegation zone. I mean, they've
Jermaine
done
Defoe.
It for a few years here. And, yeah, I mean, whatever it is, they find a way to do it. They had the great escape under Gus Poyet a couple seasons ago where they got incredible results over their final six matches. And I just think now that they're at this point and it's so crystal clear and Everton is in such turmoil, I know Everton has more talent than Sunderland, but they're going to the Stadium of Light in the middle of the week tomorrow. I don't know how Sunderland doesn't win this game and wrap up the relegation zone tomorrow.
How does Roberto Martinez still have a job? Does anyone know?
I have no idea. Because he's a nice guy, maybe, even though he did throw his players under the bus last weekend.
Yeah, well, he should have a nice job waiting for him for the European Championships.
I know.
Yeah, it's hard to make an argument for Newcastle at this point, though. Really, I think that game against Villa was their last chance.
That was it.
They blew it.
You know, it's sad. It's I hate to be hot takey, but it's kind of pathetic that they came out and set up the way that they did in a game that was right there to be won. Villa's not playing for anything. Villa's not. They barely even played, and Newcastle couldn't win. I don't know. It's
been
baffling.
Mystifying. Baffling is a good word for.
Well, they overachieved with Rafa coming back. Like they gave themselves a chance. They really shouldn't have even done this well. And Sunderland picked up their play towards, you know, at the same time, which was unfortunate for Newcastle because they really have been playing a lot better and getting some results under Rafa. This would make Rafa a free agent again, though. And, you know, I don't think there's anything substantial about this, but talking about Roberto Martinez not having a job, I would see Rafa clearly putting his name forward for the Everton gig. I mean, they have a pretty good team. He has some history. I know he's been on Liverpool's side, and it's tough to switch over, but this is the same guy who took a job over at Chelsea after all the things that went back and forth with him back when he was a Liverpool manager. So I don't think that – I think he's a professional in the truest sense of the word, and he doesn't – I don't think he cares where he's coaching. He just wants to coach.
And he's got thick skin after all of the horrible things Chelsea fans were chanting during his tenure at Stamford Bridge.
Oh, exactly. I think – and then, you know, the other side of it, they could always go back to Moyes.
All right, well, let's take a short timeout. After the break, we'll talk about what's happening outside England in the soccer world, namely in Spain and Germany. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast, direct from the FC Yahoo Soccer blog at yahoosports.com. And if you're looking for a sports radio morning show that is just a little bit more entertaining and has a little bit of fun, along with all your coverage of sports every morning, check out the Steve Zabin Show, direct from Yahoo Sports Radio.
I must give you some constructive criticism.
Oh, please, by all means.
Hold
number
your camera
one, still.
Number one, why is your name lowercased on your Twitter?
I have no idea. I think when I filled out the form years ago when I joined, I just filled it out quickly.
When you look at that, that doesn't immediately jump off the page
not,
and bother
Lily? Not me. It bothers
you.
You. It bothers you. It doesn't bother me in the least.
How could you look at that and not be bothered by that?
I actually like lowercase letters.
That is
uniform.
That is paint on your carpet.
No, it's
clean
paint on your
that
carpet.
Up, for God. Paint what are you
on
doing?
Your carpet.
Look at that, Sky. Right. Steve Solomon. That's a capital S and a capital S
should
right
I go,
there.
I'd say, all how capitals. About if I go all caps? Five, then four.
That's psychotic.
No.
No, don't do that. No. Oh, that's crazy.
You don't do random caps like the Unabomber. Oh,
yeah,
or
like,
crazy
like the
like
hostage
that.
Notes. Yeah. No.
Clean that up, brother.
I like the lowercase.
Boy.
Steve Zabin, mornings, 6 a.m. until 10 a.m. Eastern on Yahoo Sports Radio. Listen live and check out the podcast of The Steve Zabin Show, yahoosportsradio.com. It's time to get back to everything, football and soccer from across the world. This is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast from Yahoo Sports Radio and Yahoo Sports. Once again, your host, Joe Lago.
Welcome back. I'm Joe Lago, here with Shahan Ahmed, Alex Baker, and Joey Galino. Let's talk about the title race in Spain, where it's down to two teams going into the final weekend in La Liga. It's going to be either Barcelona or Real Madrid winning La Liga after Atletico Madrid surprisingly fell to Levante on a late goal by American-born Giuseppe Rossi. Barca sits atop the table still at 88 points and will be going to Granada on Saturday. Real Madrid in second at 87 points will be going to Deportivo La Coruña. But let's talk Real Madrid and the job that Zinedine Zidane has done since he took over for Rafa Benitez. Win or lose, it's pretty surprising that Real's even in the title mix going into the final weekend. Who wants to grade the job that Zidane has done so far this season at Real?
Full marks, I think, is, we'll use the European expression, full marks for what he walked into, which wasn't necessarily a bad job, but he went to the Camp Nou and won. And back when I was saying that they probably should have rested Messi, Suarez, and Neymar, they didn't. Barcelona did not rest their guys at home coming off an international break. And, you know, Real Madrid went there, and that's how they got back in the league. If they lose that game, they're not in contention in this last week. They're in the Champions League final. They will go in there as favorites because they're playing against Atletico Madrid, and they have Ronaldo. So, you know, even if they don't, if they don't win La Liga, which I don't think they will, you look at Barcelona, they've beaten their last four, you know, opponents 21-0. They've outscored their last four opponents. Pretty much since they got knocked out of the Champions League, they've just destroyed everybody. I think it was 5-0 last week, too. So, yep. I don't see them blowing it at this point, because really they only have that to really look forward to, and then obviously they'll have the Copa del Rey final, but that's afterwards. I think Zidane's done an incredible job in terms of managing these personalities, and one thing, you know, I don't think we got into enough on the last podcast when we were talking about Real Madrid is the job he's done with Bale. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Gareth Bale was the best player for Real Madrid in that second leg. He was the match winner. His shot deflected and went in. He had a couple balls over the top. He's allowed Bale to have that extra freedom, especially when Ronaldo hasn't been firing at 100%. And I think he's managed to give Bale a position in this team without alienating Ronaldo. And I think it's Zidane's personality that's allowed that transition to happen. I don't think that was happening under Rafa. I think there's a little bit more of a struggle, a little bit more of a strife in the locker room and on the pitch. But I think there is greater harmony in allowing Bale to play, you know, more of as a central figure and really possibly even their best attacking player.
Yeah, the injury to Ronaldo and Benzema kind of made it easy to put Bale front and center. But also Zidane's done a great job of solidifying the midfield with playing Casemiro with Luka Modric and Toni Kroos. I mean, Casemiro does all the dirty work. And you need somebody like that.
Yeah, I would give him an A. I mean, if you think about it, he's had injuries to two of his biggest players, or Benzema and Ronaldo. He's still managed to keep winning. He's got them back into a title race that everyone thought they were out of 2 months ago. He's got them into the Champions League final. And he's sort of restored, I think, the feel-good factor in the dressing room is what you hear about behind the scenes. I can't honestly think of how it could be going better for Real Madrid right now from where he started to where he's taken it. So I'd give him a straight up A.
And I think I'd give him an A too. Maybe an A minus, just so we leave a little space for if he wins the Champions League, there you go, you give him an A. Or maybe an A to an A plus. But yeah, you know, he's not just some big name for hire either. Like, he's not a Mourinho, he's not an Ancelotti, he's not a Benitez, all of whom have their drawbacks as well as qualities. He's someone who's been there. You know, Mourinho was pining for him to become more involved with the team when he was there. He coached Real Madrid's B team for a while. And, you know, I don't know if any of this necessarily is the boilerplate resume, so to speak, for someone to take over a big club, but he's been around this team for a long time. He was a star when he was there as a player. He's been a steady presence at the club, and he does kind of have, you know, this. He said a couple weeks ago or whatever it was, he said, "I've never lost my head." I think some of us would disagree who watched the 2006 World Cup final.
Quite literally lost.
Quite literally. But, you know, he has brought kind of a steadying presence. And going back to the Gareth Bale point, it's not just that. You know, he's found a place for Lucas Vasquez week in and week out. He's making smart team selections. And, you know, the results speak for themselves. So, and they have to take a very serious look at bringing him back next year, because he's done a phenomenal job.
Yeah, I mean, just hearing those
comparisons, or not comparisons, but those notes where you say he was a star player for the team, you know, he coached the B team, and then he gets promoted and does a good Pep Guardiola pops into my head immediately, because there is a lot of that same. I don't think he spent as much time with the B team as Pep did. I think Pep was there for a good amount longer.
I think he was.
But it is a really high profile like role to walk into. You have star players looking at you, but because you have the gravitas of what you did as a player, and you have some, you know, managing background, but really not at the highest level, you're still able to get the players' ears. They respect you, not just as a manager, but as a former pro. And I think that's what's worked for Zidane. I think initially a lot of that probably worked for Pep as well, until he was able to show everybody, hey, I'm a hell of a manager, and I can actually make you guys way better than you ever thought you could be. So I think that's where Zidane is trying to emulate something similar at Real, which Barcelona had tremendous success with under Pep.
I'm going to give him an A, but I'm going to throw this out to you guys. Do we dare give credit to Florentino Perez for making the change, for dumping Rafa and going forward with his... I mean, Zidane was going to take over at some point.
Yeah, I think you get credit for dumping Rafa, for pulling the trigger when he did. I mean, you could question the wisdom of having sacked Ancelotti to get there in the first place, but I think he knew when to cut bait, and I mean, you can't argue with the math. Since Zidane has taken over, no team in the league has won as many points as Real Madrid have. So
yeah.
Perez, in this case, made the right call.
This whole situation smacks of restraint to me, which is kind of weird when you're talking about Real Madrid and Florentino Perez especially. You say you could take issue with him at sacking Ancelotti. You certainly could. You could also take issue with any number of moves he's made over the years. But this is kind of, you know, yes, it was a bold move to maybe not bold, but it was a big power move to get rid of Rafa Benitez. But I think a lot of people agreed it was, you know, might have been the right move, and that's certainly proven itself here. And, you know, he I guess you do have to give him credit for this, because it's worked out. And I think the same level-headedness of that move is kind of, I don't really know the word I'm looking for here. It's not transferred or emblematized or anything like that through Zidane. It's just he's got the, you know, what that decision speaks to is something that Zidane has in spades, just not too much. He's got that managerial capital, as you mentioned, from his time as a player and his time with the team. But he's not using it to necessarily be like a fire and brimstone kind of guy. He's just getting what he needs out of this team. He's managing it very well. And it's just, it for Los Galacticos, it's a little odd for me to see.
I do not give him that much credit, to be honest with you. I'll be, you know, contrarian on this one. I think he's made tons of moves over the years that have been extremely questionable. I think that he doesn't make that firing if he doesn't know that Zidane wants that job and is waiting to take it over. There are already rumors about him coming in, you know, well in advance of this. So as much as, yes, he made the eventual change, we all know that Zidane was working very closely in a special role that, you know, Florentino Perez had created for him for this eventuality at some stage for him to become involved with the club. Maybe not as a manager, but as an executive, which he was for a long time under Florentino Perez when he came back. But basically, if Zidane wanted it, I think Perez would have given him that opportunity, and it seemed like Zidane wanted it, so I'll give Zidane more credit on taking this job rather than Perez being like, we're going to get rid of Rafa, oh, we need a new manager. Zidane, would you like to? I'm pretty sure it happened the other way around. I think Zidane said, hey, Rafa, these players don't like Rafa because they're talking to me anyway, and I want this job. And Perez said, okay, I don't really like Rafa either, because seemingly no one really backs him for too long.
Yeah, he keeps getting great jobs. It's kind of
weird. Well, he's actually a good manager. He technically knows what he's doing. I think the people person skills aren't necessarily all there for him.
What do you guys see happening on Saturday? Who's going to win the La Liga crown?
I don't know how it's not Barcelona. I mean, they've put themselves in this position. Yeah, they had the slip-up. You know, we've talked about it on previous podcasts where the players came back from the international break and, you know, that big travel to South America to play some games and then come back and immediately jump into El Clasico. And Barcelona stumbled. You know, they exited the Champions League. But now that they've refound their footing, I just, you know, the results that these two teams, Real Madrid and Barcelona, had earlier in the season against the teams they're playing were both, you know, overwhelming blowouts. It was like 4-0 and 5-0 or something like that. So as good of a job as Real Madrid has done to put themselves in this position, I just, you know, it's got to be Barcelona.
Yeah, I agree. I was going back and looking at some of the stuff I wrote early in the season for Barcelona, and I actually said, you know, back when I was coming off of actually watching them play at Camp Nou in August, I said that Barcelona would not win La Liga, but they would win Champions League and they'd win the Copa del Rey. Because I said that they would prioritize Champions League over La Liga, you know, we talked about the Clásico where they didn't do that, and seemingly that's what cost them Champions League. Mm-hmm. But because they didn't prioritize it, now La Liga, because they kept playing their players in La Liga, I think at this point they have to collect La Liga. It's their focus, and that's what won them La Liga. Would they rather have had Champions League? I think so, and I think that's where Luis Enrique made, you know, a terrible call in terms of, hey, this is not as important. We've won La Liga a million times. No club has ever won Champions League in back-to-back years, and we're good enough to do it. That should have been the mental approach. It never quite got there. So, yeah, they'll win La Liga.
Yeah, and that's not a bad thing, and they'll probably win the Copa del Rey, too. So that's a double, and that's certainly a respectable season. But, look, both these teams, barring an upset, are most likely going to win Saturday, and that will mean Barcelona is champions. And that's not a bad season. It's a little disappointing for Enrique. Maybe there's the feeling that the team has backslid a little bit from last season or not progressed, but you know, it's fine margins, and the way Atleti kind of stilt teams, and then they went and did the same thing to Bayern, it doesn't make Barca look so bad for having gone out of the league to them. So,
well, what do you guys think? I mean, Barcelona, you know, if they win La Liga, they win the Copa del Rey, obviously Champions League was the priority. They were trying to repeat, but what do you guys think? I mean, is it a disappointment that they didn't at least go fulfill their Champions League dreams again?
Yeah, for me it is. I mean, you think about this, that front three set the record for most goals from a front three ever last year. They scored more goals this year than they did last year. There was a time this season where we were looking at Barcelona saying, this is possibly the greatest team we've ever seen. You know, they were on that level, and they just had this two-week stumble where they really blew their entire season because of that two-week stumble, and they went from being possibly the greatest team of all time to, you know, last year was better. Like, that's genuinely what ended up happening with them. And, you know, but I do think that next year, you know, they're going to be right up there for the favorites to do the treble again, frankly. And, you know, they're bringing Hassan Benafra, who's been on fire. So I think he's coming into their team as well. And, you know, I don't think he's available for France just because of France is trying to stay away from any controversy. You know, just like Benzema's not available either for them. But I think that, you know, Benafra is actually a quality player that can make a lot of, you know, make them have those incisive moments when they need it coming out of the midfield.
He's a guy who's great on the dribble, who can create. But what else does Barcelona need? I mean, there's Paul Pogba's out there, has always been mentioned as a possible link to Barca. But, you know, if you're going to, well, we talked about in previous podcasts, you know, the Arda Turan transfer didn't work out, or Luis Enrique, he didn't trust them. He just didn't give them the depth that they needed. You know,
so they need more guys coming through the academy, frankly. I think that the academy guys that have been coming through lately just haven't impressed to the same level that they used to in the past.
Mm-hmm. I think that Barcelona should be very careful. I do think it's a disappointment because the Champions League is what these guys play in. Yes, they will celebrate La Liga. Yes, it means a lot. Yes, the, you know, Copa del Rey will mean something. But this is the stratosphere that clubs like Bayern and Real Madrid and Barcelona play in. You play to win the Champions League. And it's one that other clubs like Paris Saint-Germain have poured a lot of resources into, you know, trying to win, and they haven't done it, and they consider that a disappointment themselves. So, of course, I think Barcelona should. I think they should be careful in overreacting to what happened here, because I think we all agree, I'm not saying they don't need to make some changes here and there, but I think we all agree the one team that could have knocked them out was Atletico Madrid, and Atletico Madrid ended up doing that. I think Barcelona would have wiped the floor with the other seven teams or the other six teams in the quarterfinals. So I don't know if it's necessarily I don't know if there's a symptom here of something other than an inability to beat Atletico Madrid if they're drawn together in the Champions League the way that Atletico plays. So I think Barcelona should look to make changes, but be a little, don't overreact to this.
That's why I'm gonna say, you know, I think it's disappointing they didn't make it to the Champions League final. But I think the season of, you know, you still can't discount the fact that they're going to win the league and they're going to win the Copa del Rey. There's still something to that. So my disappointment is a little more nuanced.
Right. And I think the development of the MSN trio up top this season and the way that they've played now that Suarez really is kind of that out-and-out center forward. He is the aerial threat that they need. He is going to win the top scorer award in La Liga, it looks like. And, you know, it's so funny. Like, Lionel Messi, it seems like he's kind of had, you know, an off season, so to speak, by certain respects. Then you look up, and across all competitions, he's got 41 goals and, like, 19 assists or something like that. So he's still doing phenomenally. I think that the emergence of those guys, it's not that they didn't know how to play together before. Clearly they did because they won the Champions League last year. But I think they found an even higher level to play at this year together. And that bodes very well, obviously, going forward.
I think on some small level that they're maybe paying the price for not having adequately replaced Pedro. Because the thing about Pedro, and he's not been great at Chelsea, but what he was a guy who would sit on the bench, and when you needed a goal, you could bring him off the bench, and more often than not, he would deliver you one. He's got no one like that. And thankfully, these guys have managed to go through the season relatively injury-free, but if they're not firing like they weren't for a couple of weeks, he had nobody to go to the bench. So he needs to get a signing, another guy who's... You know, about
Alexis Sanchez, maybe going back to Barcelona.
No, I think you know, we're very quick to forget that Messi missed what, almost 2 months.
Yep.
This season, and you know the 41 goals are impressive, but you take into account that he was out for a couple months. It's mind-boggling. Luis Suarez has been their best player for me this season. He's been doing everything. When Messi was out, when Messi was there, when they were DOA. You know, against Atleti in that first leg, he was the one who came through. Whenever they needed him to do anything, he was. Whenever they needed something, he was seemingly at times the only guy actually working like a madman to make it happen.
It was weird. It looked like his days at Liverpool, where, you know, Liverpool needed something. They needed a goal. They needed someone to make a play, to create something. It was Suarez who would, you know, he's going into other people's spaces to get the ball and make something happen. But. That is a good point.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to end up, I mean, unless Ronaldo slots in five and Suarez doesn't score, he's going to end up winning, you know, the Pichichi this season, which is incredible considering Messi and Ronaldo play in that league. Like, that in of itself is incredible. So I think that, yes, we shouldn't overreact, but I do think that there is a little bit of a transition going on in Barcelona, and I think that from the players' standpoint, considering what they achieved last year when it was their first year together for, you know, namely those three top three guys, Neymar, Messi, and Suarez, I think that this year has to be seen as somewhat of a disappointment. Now, it'll be interesting to see how they react to that disappointment, because, yes, they're going to win La Liga, they're going to win the Copa del Rey. Do they now look around and say, okay, well, we didn't make history here. Do we want to do it here this year, or do we want to move on and go somewhere else? For a guy like Neymar, I don't think that Messi's going anywhere. I don't think that Suarez is going anywhere. I think Neymar, though, I think there are going to be a lot of offers for him. I think there are going to be a lot of clubs that are going to tempt him, and it's going to come down to him being like, hey, I'm kind of the third wheel on this one. Do I, as being Neymar, the biggest star from Brazil for my entire life, want to be the third wheel at Barcelona?
That's an intriguing question, because he's already won the Champions League. He's already won La Liga. He's won, you know, these big trophies, and he's still very young, and he's still, you know, maybe arguably just entering his prime, so to speak. So that could be the biggest thing Barcelona does this summer, in addition to trying to add depth and stuff like that, is convincing Neymar to stay.
Yeah, I mean, there's the persistent Man United link. Well, where do you think Neymar could end up that would make sense for him after he's accomplished a lot already at Barcelona? But
Leicester City. Sorry, what?
Arsenal. That would be phenomenal. Arsenal. Oh, man.
Arsenal, come on. You have to spend money. He's not coming on a free.
That's true.
You know, Man U is definitely, we hear that rumor a lot, and they sort of need a big star to build the team around if they really want to sort of
It fits their marketing plan.
Revitalize the Man United brand. That's a huge statement to sign a guy like that.
Yeah, I also feel, though, it does make sense, and obviously any club in the world would want Neymar. However, I also feel like Manchester United is sort of just kind of like the cliche team to throw out in a certain regard here. Neymar, I think, would clearly want to stay, again, in that stratosphere that I mentioned earlier of these major clubs. He ain't going to Real Madrid. That would not be received very well in Barcelona. Manchester United is a possibility. Maybe Pep lures him to Manchester City or something as, like, the first, you know, splashy signing, along with a Pogba, for example.
for whatever reason, I don't see Neymar going to Bayern Munich, which means he probably will end up going to Bayern Munich because I'm always wrong. Maybe PSG tables a bid. You know, you can make an argument for pretty much any of the major clubs in Europe outside of Real Madrid.
I'm not sure he's the right quality. sorry, that was my Arsene Wenger terrible impression.
We need to look at the better players.
There you go. That's more French.
Yeah, I think Man City would actually be a pretty interesting spot. It would be another, you know, it would be a heck of a capture for Pep to walk in there. And, you know,
it'd be amazing.
If you remember back when Neymar was playing with Santos and they were playing in the Club World Cup, he went to Pep and said, "Hey, bring me to Barcelona."
Yep.
He told Pep that. So he wanted to come play for Pep. I think there will be some attraction. If you're Pep, why wouldn't you go after a guy like that?
Right.
And, you know, Joey's point is valid. He's already won the Champions League, so he could afford to sit out a season of the Champions League and help get back into, you know, if City is not in the Champions League or if United is not in the Champions League, if he wants to go to either of those clubs and be the face of that club. I mean, United would be genuinely, as a marketing tool for him, his brand would expand to a different level. He would actually be on that same plane as Ronaldo and Messi, essentially, mm-hmm. because United has that type of pull worldwide, and they put Neymar in the front of their face, like on the top of that jersey. It's, you know, it's a marriage made in heaven.
He
for
would
them.
Become the face of the Premier League.
He would.
The Premier League has not had a top five player, top 10 player, maybe even since Suarez left.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Every year, you know, they lost Bale. I mean, you go back, and the Premier League has not had one of those type of players. Neymar immediately becomes the face of the Premier League for Man United and that marketing power. Yeah, I mean, that's quite the combination.
And I wonder, just, you know, and this is just my own personal speculation. I'm not Neymar. I'm not inside his head, but I kind of think to myself, what did we wonder about him coming out of Brazil? We wondered, is he worth the hype? He proved that at the Confed Cup a couple years ago. He was great in the World Cup until he got hurt. You know, Brazil fell apart, arguably with, you know, partially his doing because he got sent off in the Copa America last summer. But, you know, he's done well for Brazil. He's done well for Barcelona. We know he's legit, clearly. So now I wonder, does he want to go to another club with a tradition of winning? Or maybe does he want to go to City and the allure of the fact that, you know, not only the resources and things like that they have in Pep, but they've never won the Champions League. You know, they are a new power in this game, and I wonder if that holds any appeal to a guy like that who's already been in a club that's known for success.
There's always the question, the looming question, can he do it on a rainy night?
Yes.
So, can he do it?
Well, it's funny you mention that because that was always what was applied to Messi, right?
Mm.
And when you do look at Neymar coming to Barcelona and, you know, he's never going to get past what Messi was able to do with that club because Messi started at such a young age at Barcelona and he stayed through all the way and the numbers he still continues to put up now. So no matter how amazing a career Neymar has, he's always going to be slightly compared to Messi and he's always going to be below Messi on that, you know, Barcelona Parthenon when they're going and they're actually looking at the greatest players in Barcelona's history. So from his standpoint, as much as, you know, club allegiance has something to do with it, it might not have anything to do with it because he understands, hey, I'm playing with a guy who's like once in a generation great and I'm playing with him and I was originally brought here to kind of be the next in line to replace him.
He's going to have to wait a long time before he gets
That's the other part of it. And right now, the way Suarez is playing, really, Suarez is arguably their best player this season, second best player at worst. He's, you know, so Neymar is definitely number three on that list right now. There was a lot of, you know, love between all three of them and sharing everything. That seems to have wound down a little bit, especially since they've, you know, got knocked out of the Champions League. It seemed like they haven't been posting as many selfies together and you know, the usual locker room antics. It has kind of dumbed down. They don't necessarily show up to the games together. And they're not hanging out all the time. And I think, like, that may be something that comes up this summer.
Before we wrap this up, we got to talk about Bayern Munich. They're in the news because Mats Hummels is going back to Bayern and Renato Sanches, the aforementioned Renato Sanches from Benfica, the 18-year-old, has been signed by Bayern. So Carlo Ancelotti seems to be walking into a pretty good situation, but is it better than what Pep walked into 3 years ago?
I think so, but Alex, go first.
Well, personnel-wise, I think it is a bit, but I also think he doesn't have to follow a treble, which I think is a big difference. I think there's less pressure for Ancelotti. He can take this team, and if he gets to the Champions League final, that's an improvement, So I think it is, but I think Pep had a tough situation. And also, Pep was sort of brought in to kind of remake the club and his image. And maybe Bayern's really not the club that wants you to do that, in spite of maybe they thought they did with Pep. Where Ancelotti's just going to come in. He's going to be a good manager. He's going to fix things that are wrong. I think he's actually probably a better fit for Bayern.
I don't think necessarily they only looked for a manager just to remake the club and their image. I mean, they were coming off a treble. They'd had a lot of success. But I think they were just looking at Pep and saying, hey, this is the hottest manager in world of football. Why would we not bring him in? And Heinkes, you know, was retiring at the end of that year. It's not like he really wanted to hang around anyway. I do think that this is definitely one of those situations where it's better off than Pep was. We all talked about when Pep took that job, what would be success for Pep? Because you're coming off a treble. You're inheriting a treble-winning team. If you win the treble, you equaled it. You didn't really better what your predecessor did.
The only bar was a stylistics, you know, bar that he could exceed.
Right. And he did a heck of a job on the stylistic side. But really, when you look at what Ancelotti's coming in for, he's coming off his job is to win the Champions League, right? And he's done that. You know, he won Decima with Real Madrid. He won it twice with AC Milan. He's kind of a Champions League specialist, a lot of people refer to him as. When you look at him coming into Bayern Munich, the Bundesliga is probably, you know, it's Bayern's to lose every single year. Mm-hmm. Dortmund is usually their only real competition, and, well, their central defender just hopped ship and joined Bayern right now. So they're always a rebuild project because Bayern keeps taking all their players. I mean, Lewandowski, Götze might be going back over, but
Marco Reus is on the clock.
Well, Marco Reus is the only one that seems to really true want to stay at Dortmund, and we'll see how long that lasts before. Because, I mean, frankly, a lot of people think that both Aubameyang and Reus might be going in tandem over to Liverpool soon enough because Klopp just landed there.
Yeah, I think I think Pep's or Carlo Ancelotti's walking into a better situation from this standpoint. All the things you guys said are true about, you know, the ceiling is obviously already been set and the best he could do is basically equal it. But I also think that brings with it a certain type of player. You know, Guardiola, for all his success in Spain, walks into that side with the Robins and the Loms back then and the Neuers. And then, you know, I'm not saying they said this, but they can kind of look at him and say, what we're doing is working. Why are we going to change things? Like, why are we going to overhaul things for you? Ancelotti's walking into a situation where you have that established core group of players, but you're also bringing in Sanchez. Douglas Costa had a great year, but you know what? He's still pretty young, and he's still kind of coming into his own with the side. Mats Hummels is coming over there, and he's going to be very motivated to win the Bundesliga and win the Champions League with Ancelotti. So I think there's more room for Ancelotti to develop this team where maybe Pep had limitations not only in his ceiling of success but what he could change with Bayern Munich. So that's why I think that Ancelotti is walking into a better situation.
I mean, from a legacy standpoint too, imagine if, for me, I say Ancelotti's walking in as the favorite to win the Champions League next year. You know, Barcelona and Bayern are going to be probably favorites on day one regardless. And right now you look at Bayern is definitely improving based on the transfers they've made. They already have an incredible squad. They should have, frankly, you know, if you just look at the strength of the squad from 1 through 23, they probably had the best squad in Europe. So Ancelotti comes in. Let's say he does win the Champions League next year and probably does the treble if you do that because the Bundesliga kind of just falls in your lap anyway. The whole three-year Pep tenure of, you know, winning the Bundesliga and then popping out at the semifinals, all of a sudden you're looking at Ancelotti in 1 year making you forget that Pep even really existed because that style is not – I mean, they are going to have possession, but it's not going to be that style of possession football anymore. It's going to be more, you know, slightly more direct – or no, significantly more direct, I'd imagine. And it's going to just – if they actually have success with it, the sooner they have success with it, the sooner that whole little rendezvous of Pep and Munich is going to kind of seem like, oh, you know, it's going to seem less and less like a success based on how Ancelotti does. However, if Ancelotti doesn't win the Champions League, there's no real pressure on him to do that. That just, it's really like a win-win. It's the opposite of what Pep had, which was a lose-lose. Regardless of what you do, you can't really win because you just won the treble right now. Ancelotti walks in, it's like, regardless of what you do, you really can't lose because we had arguably the best manager in world football and he couldn't win us the Champions League. You won the Champions League, hey, you're better than that guy.
Well, also, for Pep Guardiola, it was not just to win. It was to win in this spectacular sort of way. He was going to go and create this sort of Bayern Salona style of play. And I don't think anyone really cares how Ancelotti's team plays. It's just go in and play well, don't make it boring, and just win.
I feel like it's a little more straightforward. Like, let's go back to getting results. Mm-hmm. You know, and Ancelotti will have this built-in cushion. You know, there might be some type of transition for him getting used to the league, but like you meant, you know, Dortmund's likely will lose two of its better players. I mean, Bayern will always have that cushion in league, in domestically, and you know the goal is always to get to win the Champions League and to match his predecessor. He just makes to make you know get to the semifinals. So
yeah, I mean the one thing I'll say is you know Ancelotti's probably not going to be playing David Alaba at center back. Like it's just probably not going to be happening.
Might not make a what's Philip Lahm a midfielder?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, that kind of made sense a little bit because Lahm was getting a little bit slower to be playing fullback, and he's still a very intelligent player who could, you know, pass the ball around. But the Alaba thing, you know, it really showed itself, and that's kind of where they got burned a little bit.
He played Kimmich, who was a midfielder at center back too, right?
And he's a complete kid.
Yeah.
And that was in the Champions League too.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's really – Pep took a lot of chances. And, you know, more credit to him. He's never been necessarily a traditional by-the-book manager. But, I mean, if you think back to his Barcelona days, he played Yaya Toure in the Champions League final as a center back. That was Yaya Toure's single Champions League victory. He played as a center back. You look at Mascherano. He made Mascherano into a center back. That's the joke. The joke that I have is he's going to bring Pogba to Man City and make him into a center back. Like it's because that's what Pep would do. It's just kind of like one of those funny, weird things that he likes to do.
On that note, guys, let's wrap things up. Great pod. Be sure to subscribe to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast on iTunes, and be sure to read all of our stuff on the FC Yahoo blog on Yahoo Sports. For Shahan Ahmed, Joey Galino, Alex Baker, I'm Joe Lago. You have been listening to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. So long.